Padram karne pishunayamate vaha Padram pashe makshabhirya chakraha Stirairangai istushtuvagum sastanupihi Yashema devahitam yatayuhu Swastina indro vriddhashravaha Swastina pusha vishvavedaha Swastina starksho arishtanemihi Swastino brahaspatir tathatu Om shanti shanti shantihi. So verse 38. Graho na tatra not sargaha Graho na tatra not sargaha Chinta yatra na vidyate, chinta yatra na vidyate, atmasanstam tadajnanam, atmasanstam tadajnanam, ajati samatam gatam, ajati samatam gatam, graha na tatra na utsargaha, chinta yatra na vidyate, Atma samstam, samstam, tadajnanam, ajati, samatam gatam. Grahaha means like to take something or to do something in a positive way. We can talk about it vidhi, anything that's enjoined. Like what is it that I can do is enjoined in terms of even gaining knowledge to gain self knowledge. What are the things that are enjoined for me to do? Or once I have self knowledge, then what are the vidhis? What are the things that I need to do? And what are the nishedas? What are the things that I need to get rid of or transform or move away from? So here he says, here, tatra, means there in this knowledge, in Brahman, say, how does he say? In Brahman, in the self that you are, there is nothing to do. There's nothing you can do. Brahman is not subject. Your Atma, Brahman, which is yourself, and the whole Vedanta is this, that yourself, the meditation is really kind of based on these verses, your this being that you are, you can't improve upon it. You can't make it better. You can't purify it. You can't transform it. There's only certain things that you could do. Right? You can move, you can travel to get there, to reach it. That's one thing you could maybe do. Or you could clean it up. It's called samskara. You could scrub it, get it a little bit cleaner. You could create it. You could transform it. So these are the things that you can do. But all of these things that you can do require time and space. You have to be able to change them. If you're working in the world of change, right, which is definitely where we're usually, this is the area that we're concerned with, this world of change, this is the world that we know, right? And so we think, well, how can I improve this? How can I improve myself to become Brahman? How can I improve myself to become Brahman? How can I do like a meditative inner travel to become Brahman? How can I create, transform myself to become Brahman? This is how we think. Because all of our experience that we have really is in the stesha kala vastu paricheda. All of our life has to do with being in this place, not that place. Well, maybe if I could travel to that place, things would be better. Or maybe if I could scrub this place, clean it up a little bit. You know, or maybe if I spend a lot of time working on this, maybe that would help. It's kala, desha kala. Vastu. Vastu means the object. An object. This object is different than this object. Maybe the object, maybe myself is an object that I can polish or clean or do all kinds of things to it. That's how we're going to think, right? Because that's all we know. Right? Our sense organs and all of our means of knowledge we have available to us give us knowledge of things that are objectifiable, that exist within the universe. Just like, for instance, I mean, obviously, all of this that you're seeing with your sense perception external to your body exists here within time and space in the universe, and I can act upon it and do things to it. But you know what? This body, it also exists in the universe, and I can act upon it and do things to it. I can change my diet, I can exercise, I can do all kinds of things to make it as healthy as possible. I can definitely do things to it. I can do things to my mind, I can make my mind better. I can do inner child work, you know, I can change, I can discipline myself, make my mind more stable, more disciplined, I can practice the values, all of these things. Because the mind also is continually changing, and so I can act upon this changing entity and improve it. Or I could act upon it negatively and make it worse also. Right? There are many, many things that I can do, positively and negatively. On everything I've always taken to be myself, my body, my mind, my sense organs, my thinking, I can do a lot of pranayama and meditative practices because I can work upon my mind in very subtle ways. I can make the mind more subtle, you know, more prayerful. All of these things because the mind is subject to change, to modification. Of course, kind of the scary thing or the samsara of this is that these things that are subject to modification and change keep modifying and keep changing. That's the problem. You modify, but then you have to modify, then you have to modify. You can't stop modifying. If you can stop modifying, it will go on modifying. You can't stop this process of change. It's the same with your mind. Say you want your mind to become quiet. I want my mind to become quiet. I want my mind to stop, to just abide in samadhi, you know, to just resolve itself, abide in samadhi. But it'll keep coming out, and so then you have to keep bringing it back in. Or you try to bring it back in, and you can't do it, and you think, just the other day I was able to, I had such an absorbed mind, you know, it was so beautiful, why can't I do that today, you know? It's an endless, endless pursuit. And this is what we're used to. Even when we think of, because that's how the world is. Of course we're used to it, because that's how the body is, that's what the mind is, the sense organs in the world. That's its nature. So this is kind of our stomping grounds, in a sense. This is where we live. And even when I think of gaining knowledge, if we have a term like self-knowledge, I think about gaining knowledge of something that is out here. And so when I think of gaining self-knowledge, the only difference is I think that I have to gain something. My mind is usually directed out here, and now we're going to direct it inward into inner space. Here's outer space. This is the outer space. It's called bahya. That I look at through my sense organs. And now, though, I have to find myself. So I have to look internally. See what I mean? So that I can find myself. I'm hidden in a subtle realm somewhere. And so the problem with that is I'm still looking, right? And I'm the one who is the self of the looker. I'm the self of the looker. So whether I'm looking in this direction or I'm looking internally, I'm still looking. And that means there's a subject-object relationship. Here there's no looking. I can't be looking, because if I'm looking internally or externally, then I'm missing the subject. I'm having an experience of the internal objects, meditative states, imaginal states, or I'm having an external experience of the world. But the self remains as that changeless common denominator, the me, that is absolutely taken for granted. Absolutely taken for granted. And always only, I would say, totally hidden. Hidden in the knower of the known. You're hidden in the knower, you know. And the knower is always knowing something else or feeling something else. And so, you know, when you're looking, you're only, your focus is only on what you're experiencing. And of course you're there, but you never think about that. You only think about the experience that you're having, you know, not about the one who's, for whom the experience is. But when it's pointed out, actually, there is no possibility of you having an experience and not being there. That's not possible. Of course you're there in every single experience. And every single experience comes and goes. There's only one experience that doesn't come and go. And that's the experience, the self-evident experience of me. It's a self-evident nature that makes me invisible to myself. As though in... that's not the way to say it. I am absolutely not invisible to myself. I am the me that is always present as me. But I never look at me from my own standpoint. I only look at me in reference to the dress that I'm wearing. And so if the mind is sad, it's a sad me. If the mind is happy, it's a happy me. If the mind is tired, or the I am tired, the body is tired, it's a tired me. I never realize, until it's pointed out, that the me is always there taking on all these dresses that come and go. I never just recognize me, the me that's always there. And that me is not an object in the world. Because no matter what the situation is, or the place is, or the experience is, I'm there as the self of every single one of them. And if I'm there as the self of every single one of them, I can't be any of them. If I'm there as the self, the me, I'm present to every single experience without any exception, how can I be any one of them? Because they all come and go. So now I have to say, that certainly makes sense. I have to see it. I have to see the truth of it. Because it matters. Because what that actually means is that whatever these qualities are or experiences that come and go actually aren't touching me at all. They're not touching me. They're not changing me. They change, and they are what they are. You know, you might have preferences, or I like this dress and not this dress. This is a happy dress, and this is a sad dress. I want only the happy dresses, you know. Or this is a clean house, and this is a dirty house. I only want the clean house. Whatever. You know, that's fine, but that's so different than recognizing your own being, which is the self of all of the dresses. If I'm the self of every dress, then I can't be any one of the dresses. It's impossible. It's impossible. And I don't experience myself as any one of the dresses or any one of the mental states, because when they go, then I'd be gone. You experience it well. It's happening, and you just automatically take yourself to be that situation you're experiencing. But when that experience is gone, you don't say, oh God, I've left. I've left. Or as the mind starts to change, and you think, oh, you know, I'm going. There's no such feeling. The experience is going, but the one who is there isn't. The me isn't. So this me, he says, there, in that self which is Brahman. Brahman means Desha, the Atma, yourself, is Brahman. What is Brahman? Desha Kala Vastu Aparicheda. Brahman is the Atma that you are, which in fact is limitless. The self that you are, if I say to you, the self that you are, this Atma, this conscious being that you are, is Brahman. You are Brahman. What do I mean? I mean you are limitless. What do we mean by limitless? Brahman is limitless. That means infinite. That's what Brahman means, the self which is infinite. Infinite means desha kala vastu paricheda. That your being isn't limited by anything. It's not limited by time. It's not limited by place. It's not limited by object. There is no time, there is no place, there is no object that does not have that as its very being. And if it doesn't have that as its very being, it has that as its very being, every single time, every single place, everything, single object, then that self is free of all of those things. If it's not free of those things, then when this object is here, I'm here, but when this object is here, I'm not here. Or if it's limited by time, when this period of time is here, then I was here, but now that this period of time is here, I'm not here. You know? That means that I would be somehow connected. That would be Sangha. But we say that Atma, yourself, is Asangha. Means it's ever-present to every experience, but all experiences come and go with itself remaining untouched. What that actually means is every single moment of your experience of this paricheda, of all of this changing world, you are there in exactly the same way. Your being is there exactly the same way because you, who you are present to every experience that you have. And so that has to be recognized. So what he says in this first part, in Brahman, Natatra, he says, not there, in yourself, which is Brahman, there's no gra, there's no viddhi, there's no nishedha. There's nothing for you to do. There's no way to improve it, and there's no way to make it worse. There's nothing that you need to do to find it, and there's nothing that you need to do to need to get rid of in order to make it better or to purify it. That's not possible. That's not possible because you can do that if it's an object in the world that can be negated by other objects, but yourself is there present to all objects. So what are those objects going to do? It's not possible for them to do anything or for any experiences to do anything at all because you're the self of every experience. So your only task here is to recognize yourself. That's it. He also says, and he says, not only that, chinta yatra navidyate, there's nothing you can do, even because all of the chinta, all of your thoughts, chinta means your thoughts. Your thoughts are not there. You know, do you think that if you have a thought, all of a sudden yourself has become that thought? You know? Do you become, so you have a thought, so you have an emotion. Does yourself become that emotion? If it becomes the emotion, what happens when that emotion goes? No. Were you there before the emotion? See what I mean? The emotions change and they come and go, but they come and go in you. You're there, you're the conscious being who is now having this emotion. You're the conscious being who is now having this emotion. You're the conscious being who is now having this emotion. But I'm the one who is there actually present to all of these emotions. I'm not having any emotion, really. Otherwise, there'd be no viveka between myself and the emotion. How can I say, I was so... This is what we call a pratyabhijna. If I say, it's a self-memory. I was so upset yesterday. Thank goodness I'm fine now. You know? I was so happy yesterday, and now something's happened. You know? So the one who is happy, is now the one who is sad. But the one who is sad and upset is now the one who is happy. But I was present to both. I was there in the sad state, and now I am there in the happy state. How can I be there in both? Right? It doesn't make any sense. There's what we call this little piece of logic that we need to be awake to all the time. It's called the Anvaya Vyatireka. It goes like this. It's just a simple logic. It says, this is the logic. The Anvaya is, when this is, that is. Whenever this thing is, that is. The Vyatireka is the negation. And when this thing is not, that is not. When this is, that is. When that is not, when this is not, that is not. So an example. When the sun is up, the day is. When the sun goes down, the day is gone. It's invariable. Sun is, day is. Sun is gone, day is gone. So then we can say, you know, the day is dependent on the sun. Right? That's and the Anvaya Vyatireka shows this invariable relationship. The one depends on the other. And so then, say, now I have to discover who I am, I would have to say, you know, when this experience is, I am. When this experience goes, I go. Now, if that's true, then there's an invariable relationship there, and I'm totally dependent on that relationship to be. So now I say like this, when my mind is happy, I am. When my mind is not happy, I am not.
That's a problem.
It's not true. What the truth is when my, if I go like this, when my mind is happy, I am. And when the happy mind becomes a sad mind, I still am. So we have to say that, otherwise, when the mind is happy, I am, or the mind becomes sad, you know, I've gone somewhere else. I don't exist anymore. But that isn't true. So, yeah, that's true. That's not true, right? That's not true. But if it's not true, we're not talking about something theoretical here. We're talking about my experience as a person. This isn't a theory. It's just a little piece of logic that's talking about the truth of your experience. And so what this requires, because we're not used to thinking about this, is we have to say like this, okay, well, who is it that remains? When I am happy, when the mind is happy, I am. When the mind becomes sad, I still am. Who still is? Right? Logically, it makes sense, right? But now you have to say, okay, who sticks it out? Who remains? Who is it, the me, that I cannot get rid of? No matter what the experience, who is it that I can't negate? Because now, see, we tend to, when we're sometimes doing this teaching or when you're listening, it stays on, can stay on a theoretical level. But we're not talking theoretically, really. It is theoretical. You can say that, but for it to be a pramana, it's not theoretical. You know? So it's asking you, the Upanishad is asking you to notice something about your experience and to actually notice, well, what about, where, who is the me that that I can't get rid of. The self that I can't get rid of, the self that I cannot negate. No matter what experience is there, no matter what emotion is there, no matter what anger is there, whatever is there. Because these experiences, the ones that we're so used to noticing, are negating each other all the time. You know, if I look over here, I have one experience. If I look over here, I have a totally different experience. But this emotion is different than this emotion. This imagination or this thought is different from this thought. So these experiences are changing, negating themselves all of the time. They're one experience at a time, so to speak. And there's the only constant, the only invariable there is me, because they're all my experiences. We talk like this. All of these are my experiences. Who's the my? This is the viveka that needs to take place. And in the taking place of that viveka, there's a huge, that is self-knowledge. There's more to know about Ishwara and all of that, you know. But myself becomes recognized. So the next thing he says is, Atma samstam tadagnyanam. That knowledge, you know, then tada means then that knowledge, right? That knowledge that we gain, that self-knowledge, where is that located? This is another issue here. I'm used to gaining knowledge. I gain knowledge of this, I gain knowledge of that through my sense organs. Yeah, I gain knowledge. I'm experiencing the TV, I'm experiencing the painting. I'm gaining knowledge of something that I am aware of, subject-object relationship. But in gaining self-knowledge, the mind isn't looking outward at anything. Right? There's no objectification, subject-object. So this knowledge, self-knowledge, what is happening to the mind when you're gaining self-knowledge? Where is the self in reference to the mind? This should be obvious, right? But it really isn't. Because I'm so conditioned to thinking of knowledge as gaining knowledge, subject-object. And so I think gaining objective knowledge through my sense organs, I gain knowledge of you and I gain knowledge or experience for, you know, vritti. I gain a direct, immediate knowledge of you through my sense organs, subject, object. And now I have to gain knowledge of myself. And so now I have this mind that is used to looking, subject, object. And now this mind, what is it going to do? To gain this knowledge of me? Well, it's going to look inside. Right? But if it's looking, then the self is hidden in the looker. Right? Mm-hmm. And this is one of the, what's called one of the major, one of the major paribandhakas, one of the major obstructions to gaining knowledge. So let me just show you how the mistake that we make. Now, I know that I need to gain knowledge of myself. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so now I'm going to look for that self, you know, by resolving my mind, by doing japa, doing nididhyasana, contemplation, but in a misunderstood form of it, you know, where I'm trying to gain a thought modification, right, which will be myself. I want a thought modification of myself. Now with my eyes I gain a thought modification of the painting. Now I want a thought modification of myself. We don't talk about it in this language, but this is, I think, what we do. And so then I try to absorb my mind, try to make my mind very quiet, you know, try to get rid of all of the objectifications of the mind and just make the mind very, very quiet until all that I'm experiencing in the mind, more or less, is just conscious being, you know, quiet shanti. It's a tremendous shantavritti, quiet conscious being, that then I'm kind of waiting for more and more ananda, right? So more fullness and bliss, wholeness, to come into that mind. And then if that mind becomes subtle enough and quiet enough, I will now be having an experience of myself. Mm-hmm. And I will be gaining knowledge of myself. Okay? Makes sense a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm actually doing is gaining an experience, a mental experience, of the mind. And then what happens, and it's a subtle experience, you know, it's subtle, and it's like a mirror of the mind, it's like a mirror of the self. But I can say, well, yeah, but this painting is like a mirror, right? It's like a mirror of the painting. My mind, I have a vritti of that. And so now what happens is, I'm working by creating a mental state that we call a meditative state in order to have like a mirror of myself. So far, so good. It's all close. But can't be close. It has to be right. Close doesn't count. So if it's close, now I'm having this, I've created this experience of myself, and then what happens is this beautiful experience of myself goes. Oh. You know, because the vritti changes. The thought modification changes. So I had this beautiful experience of myself, and now I've lost the experience of myself. And so now what do I have to do? Well, now I have to go back and try to have the experience of myself again. And then I have to create and work to learn how to really control my mind and live a very clean life and all these wonderful things. I'm not putting that down, but you can live a clean life, a very dharmic life, practice a lot of meditation so that I can continue to have this experience of myself. Okay? And so this becomes the Herculean task, as we'll see, as Gaudapada goes on. It becomes this Herculean task of trying to control the mind and create a situation where the mind can be controlled in such a way. It's called nigraha. I have this chitta vritti nirodha in yoga, we call it, where there's a complete control of the mind so that I can experience myself. But there's a huge problem here, because I am not the vritti. I am the self of every vritti. And the self that I am as conscious being is never covered by any vritti. I am completely 100% present as the very sat-chit ananda of every single experience that I have. But now I've decided that it is only these particular type of vrittis that is me.
Yeah.
They aren't me. They're vrittis of me. You see what I mean? They're mirrors of me. But you know what? I don't need a mirror. Mm-hmm. I am not a mirror. It's like I have to have, for me to be, I need to have a mirror that is looking at me, reflecting me. I don't need that reflection. I don't even need the... Do you need... Okay, let me put it like this. Do you think that this lamp here, for it to be... we have to put a name tag on it that says lamp. It doesn't need the name tag. And I don't need the name tag I or me, nor do I need the mirror. I am the conscious being that illumines the mirror. I am the one because of whom this mirror is known, or this thought is known, or this thought is known, or this thought is known, or this meditative experience of mind is known. And so this is the very subtle little thing, little problem. It's very, very subtle, but it wrecks everything. There's no moksha in this. Zero. All there is vritti maintenance. Liberation becomes the maintaining of vrittis, thought modifications. I need to be able to have a thought modification of myself, and I need to maintain those thought modifications of myself. As though I'm not there as the self of every thought modification. As though my self-evident presence is not there for every single thought modification without exception. That's Advaita. Imagine thinking that it's only when these vrittis are present, then I'm present. When these vrittis are not present, I'm not present, you know? Or I'm hidden, or I'm covered. You're not hidden or covered in any way. And that's the viveka that has to happen. So what he says here is Atma Samsan Tadagnanam means this knowledge is resting in your being. Atma Samsan. The knowledge itself is there, is in resting in your being. You know, it's not something that is an objectifiable experience. It's that the mind awakens to its own self that is ever present, no matter what the vrittis are. That's the Atma Samsan Tadagnanam. And that is Ajati. Ajati means there are many different species, there's many, many different groups. So you can say, well, this particular group, that's where I am. That's Ajati. So I am in the meditative Jati. That's where I exist. But this is no. This is Ajati. There is no Jati, there is no group. You are the self of every group. So, Ajati. And then what does he say? Samatam Gatam. You are always the same. Samatam means the self that you are, it never varies. It doesn't matter what the vritti is. It makes no difference at all. You're the self of every vritti. And so now what is that? What's your task now? Your task is not having a meditative, you can have meditative experiences, but you have to go farther than that. You can have absorbed certain nirvikalpa samadhi, all kinds of things like this, okay. But if it stays there that, oh, in the meditative nirvikalpa samadhi, that's where I am, then that experience is not blessing you. If you recognize yourself in that experience and then you say, oh my gosh, I'm completely there in every experience. Not just this one, I'm the self of every single experience. Then you've recognized yourself. In fact, you say, in fact, I never change in any way. I'm the changeless me of every single experience, and experiences have no capacity to cover me in any way. I'm completely present. Samatam gatam. That samatam means sameness. Whatever the experience, whatever the vritti, whether it be a depressed vritti, an angry vritti, or a sublimely meditative vritti, all of those vrittis, what would they, when if you think of the sun as illumining so many conditions on earth, horrible conditions and happy conditions, beautiful conditions, brilliant, bright conditions, and cloudy, stormy conditions. But the sun is always the same. It just is. It's not becoming stormy, it's not becoming cloudy, it's not becoming murky, it's not becoming muddy. But it's just simply the one because of whom all of these things are illumined. So I'm not becoming meditative. I'm not becoming full of vikalpas or near vikalpas. Those are all mental states. Those are all, that's all maya.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to do with that other than being the self of all of it. And so that's what has to be discerned. And then in the next verse, which we'll do next time, he says, and this can be very difficult for the yogis, for the yogis who are on this path wanting to gain self-knowledge, but they don't have this knowledge because they are working for vrittis. And that's all in maya. That's the desha kalavastu paricheda. They're in this world of maya, this world of change, working for something that is constant. And it's not there. And yet what is constant and changeless is the self of all of that, right? So what is changeless is there, but the focus is on always on what is changing. Good.
Wow.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay, let's take a moment. Swasti Prajabhya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashibamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varushatu Parujanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Bharahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
It seems to me that this focus is pivotal. That you know, I can see very clearly that you know, focusing on change, that's kind of a constant. And you're also asking, the task is to focus on the changeless as well. Is that just as vivid for a yoni as the change is, or how do you approach that?
Well, that's like saying, is your, in any experience that you're having or anything that you're doing, are, what is more evident to you, your own presence in the experience or the things that you're looking at? So once that viveka is there, mm-hmm. you're the constant in every experience. So that is the most evident. But it's not until that discrimination is there, right? Once that discrimination is there, because you're the invariable. Mm-hmm. And so you couldn't be more evident.
So it's that vivid then? I mean...
Well, are you vivid or not? You know? I mean, who's the most vivid in your experience? What's really the most vivid is your own presence. It's just that your own presence is mixed up with all of these things that are changing. But there's nothing more vivid than you. It's just the viveka isn't there, and so you have superimposed yourself on these experiences that are coming and going. Mm. What about when you are able to make that discrimination? You're still the most vivid. It's just that you haven't superimposed your being on all these changing dresses or changing conditions.
So, right, it's by hearing this over and over.
In different ways, from different angles.
Pointing to the same thing mm-hmm. over and over.
Yeah, millions of times. I haven't got tired of it, though.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not. Because
yeah, it's your own being.
No.
Yeah, it's always pointing.
The only salvation there is, really.
It's pointing at the same thing from many, many different ways. And then another beautiful thing is that every time you get, you know, you understand something, there's those little aha moments. Then now you start hearing everything that's been said all along in a little different way because it's coming into a different knowledge base.
Yeah.
And so now the connections, there's more connections. It becomes more connected.
Right. You know, I have this happened throughout the years where you speak like that, where you go and you point out that, like, looking for it is really missing it, you know. And on the other hand, you do say to do sadhanas.
Yeah.
Right? But is it possible that one can get caught up in the sadhanas and miss the point?
Well, all things are possible. But the thing is, that also there has to be viveka there. There are sadhanas for antakarana shuddhi, right? And you have to know that they are sadhanas for antakarana shuddhi. Like karma yoga, meditative exercises that we do, pranayama, these things for what we call antakarana naishchalya. It means doing exercises actually to make the mind steady and quiet and peaceful, practicing dharma, and then the values, all of those, they bring about a relatively peaceful mind. So all of those sadhanas are important because, and inner child work, all of these things are important because they make the mind more available to this knowledge. Because if the mind is in a lot of pain or hurt or trauma, then its first order of business is to circle around that hurt and pain and try to take care of it. That's its first order of business. It's just like, say you've really hurt your body in one way or another and you're trying to do shravana. Well, the body is requiring attention, you know? And the mind and the psyche is requiring attention.
You see, where I get stuck is when I hear you speaking about that any kind of doing is missing the point.
Well, that's why I'm making...
At the same time, you know, we have to come to these classes and hear it over and over and over, which is also doing.
Yeah, that's right. So let's look at that again. That's first of all, any type of karma yoga, all these sadhanas for antakarana shuddhi, that all has to do with doing. We do antakarana shuddhi. Mm. We practice attitudes, all these type of things. That's all doing. Because we are working on the mind, which is Desha Kala Vastu Paricheda. Right? The mind is something that is existing within time, that is subject to change, you know, and so we can really work on the mind to really help it to become, you know, relatively healthy, relatively calm, so that it can be available for this knowledge. There's so much also we can do for the body, you know, to eat well, to do yoga, to do appropriate amount of exercise, these type of things, so that this body also is not an obstacle. So we make this instrument, the body, mind, sense organs, we make it gain a relative shanti, a relative well-being, so that it can gain this knowledge, so that it can be available to this knowledge. But we are not doing these things to improve Brahman. I'm not doing antakarana shuddhi to purify the atma, you know. So now, in reference, I'm doing that to purify the instrument. But the self is already as pure as it can be. You're not doing these things to make your being better. So your being is advaita. It's non-dual. It's not an object to be purified. So I'm purifying this instrument, making it something that can actually recognize and be available to myself.
So the difference is that the yogi does the same thing. He's doing, you know, doing asanas to calm the body down.
All for antakarana shuddhi,
you know?
Yeah.
But the thing being is that, like, he doesn't know
or will be
that
work,
he's trying to improve the Brahman.
He will be trying to... It depends on the philosophical discipline. Mm-hmm. So the yogi, like when Gaudapada uses the word yogi,
yeah,
he's in just as seeker.
Oh,
okay,
I
so
see.
The seeker can be somebody who has not yet gained this knowledge or is using all of these sadhanas for karma yoga sadhanas in order to gain self-knowledge. But then I'm trying to gain a condition, create a vritti, which then becomes self-knowledge, and then I have to control and maintain that vritti or that type of experience, because the self, which is the self of all vrittis, that isn't known. And so then all there is that sadhana for antakarana shuddhi, but there's not the shravana manana nididhyasana for self-knowledge. So I think that's what you're getting at, right? That's what you're saying.
Well, I see it within myself. I can do so many sadhanas, right?
And those are helpful for antakarana shuddhi.
That they almost become like the goal.
Yeah,
because
and then
I
that's...
I know when I have that thought, right, of peace,
yeah,
or I'm observing samadhi, the
yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, and that's
it
a
is
huge
a
problem.
But it's still a foretaste, though.
Well, I would not really, it isn't. In some distant sense, what really happens, though, is you gain these samadhi experiences, right? And then you're working to gain them, and they last for a certain amount of time, and then you lose them, and then you think, well, if I just work really hard and I'm very diligent, that those experiences will last all of the time, and then that's moksha. And I'm saying, you know what? That's not true. Those experiences will not last all of the time. You know? And so that's very heavy lifting that is not going to result in moksha.
But for me, that wasn't an important experience to have, because I realized that no matter what I do, it always slips away, no matter how sublime the state is.
That's the experience that you need to have.
Right.
And that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of that discipline and all of that work is very helpful for antakarana shuddhi. But there has to be a recognition, you know, is shravana manana nididhyasana, to gain self-knowledge, to recognize the self that's ever-present, no matter what the experience is there. Yeah.
So I'm grateful to have you as a teacher then.
Yeah, well, yeah. In terms of traditional teaching,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then how does Ishvara fit into all of this? Then that's a kind of a doing to get clarity about Ishvara, to understand Ishvara better. How does that help with your recognition of Brahman?
Well, the recognition of Brahman, when you recognize that, well, there's a lot to say here, but anyway, to recognize...
She always does that to me.
No, I don't. I always do it to Michael.
That is true.
He always comes up with those at the last minute, like at the midnight. But what I was going to say is that when you recognize the invariable nature of yourself, and that which makes it a sangha, means that there, if yourself is changeless as these experiences are coming and going, then yourself cannot be circumscribed by these experiences. Yourself is no longer can be considered or recognized as an object within time and space. And so actually what that means is all experiences take place in you. Right? And so the teaching is really not complete until we see that all of this really is mitya, that all of this has for itself only my being. And then we understand this body, mind, sense organs belongs to this, mm-hmm. not to the Atma. The Atma, me, is a sangha, the self of every experience.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Yeah. And this belongs to the whole. And the whole has a self, which is this one self, which makes this Ishvara. There's nothing but Ishvara. This body, mind, sense organs is nothing but Ishvara. It belongs to the creation. So, and then we can use the dream analogy really effectively. Because when you have a dream, it's not like the dream character you're identified with hops into the dream from some outside location. It's part and parcel of the whole dream story. And like that, this body, mind, sense organs and all of your karma, your prarabdha, are part of Ishvara. So this is Ishvara. And this Ishvara includes this body, mind, sense organs, your prarabdha karma. All of it is Ishvara.
Which is different than taking yourself to be your own personal history or your body.
Well, all that personal history is Ishvara also.
Yeah.
Your body is Ishvara also.
Yeah.
But that requires a lot of... we have to spend time. There's a lot of teaching involved. Because we come to this knowledge with a lot of what we call mithyajnanam, false knowledge. We can have a lot of conclusions that are rational conclusions based upon our experience of being a person with sense organs and mind, and you're a person with sense organs and mind. You don't have a subject-object relationship with this world, and I'm a conscious being, and the rug isn't, and all of these kind of things.
Yeah.
And I am subject to birth and death, and you know, happiness and sorrow. And happiness, I become happy when I fulfill a desire, and I become sorrowful when I don't. These are all laws, the laws of samsara. And so now we're turning all that on its head, and say, beginningless lifetimes. That's beginningless life from a Shastric point of view. That's beginningless. Lifetimes of conclusions, that rational conclusions based upon your experience and our shared experience. It's not just my experience, it's Vyavahara, it's our shared experience. And we all agree on our shared experience. And so Vedanta comes along and says, you know, everything you think is really not like that at all. You know? It's like that, everything that you think is fine within the box of the shared experience. But in terms of who you are and the level of reality of all of this, you know, it's different than what you think.
The level of reality.
The level of reality. Yeah.
It may look high definition.
Looks HD, it is HD, but it's Maya. Yeah.
Is there much spoken about, I mean, is there a particular Upanishad or any place where becoming established, I mean, that's a term they use.
Nishta.
Nishta. in the knowledge?
I think all of them do in one way or another.
So there is becoming established.
But that's in the level of the mind, right?
Yeah.
It's the mind that becomes established. The self is already established.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no establishing for the self. You're not going to create a new self. You're going to recognize the freedom of yourself. Your most intimate self that you take to be yourself right now, it's just it's always ensconced in these experiences. You don't recognize just you, who you are. But the you that you take to be you is Brahman. You just don't know it as Brahman, but it is you. That's what you discover, is that you are Brahman. Those words are important. You, the you that you take yourself to be, that very you is Brahman. It is not you. You are not limited by this body, mind, sense organs like you think you are.
So when I say
you in fact are the self or the whole.
So when I say I am the body that... How do you translate that to what you just said?
When you say, I am the body, that I am part is Brahman. It's that you think that this body is you, but you are free of this body. That's what you have to realize. This body doesn't have another you, but the you that you are is free of this body. That's the Satyam Nitya.
Swamiji is really good at that.
Swamiji is more than good at it. He's a master.